Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder. This episode, we are talking about the summer solstice already. So I am your host, Yucca, and this is Mark.
I'm Mark. Welcome, Mark. Thank you. Welcome, Yucca. Pleasure to talk with you again.
Likewise. And you were saying that it's pretty hot for you.
It is feeling very summery. It is summery. Really hot. Yesterday it was 98 degrees where I am, and stone still. So no breeze, just this kind of hot, oppressive, dry air, which is not characteristic of my area, but what happens in the beginning of summer is that there is a stutter of what we call the fog cycle. When it gets very hot, the inland valleys have an upward draft because the air is expanding. Mm-hmm. That creates a low pressure zone that drags air in from the ocean. And that's cooler air, and it is moister air, and so it all precipitates out into fog. Mm-hmm. And that drops the temperature down into the 60s and 70s. At the very beginning of the summer, we have a series of hot days that lead to that happening. And then it's an oscillation. There'll be cool days for a few days, and then it's too cool, and so the fog doesn't come in, and so it's hot for a couple of days, and then it's been hot enough that it starts the pump going again, and then the cool air comes in, and that's kind of the way the next month and a half are going to be. Mm. How about your climate?
Well, it's the start of monsoons for us. So this is one of my favorite times of year. We are very dry for the majority of the year. But most of our moisture comes in, recently it really has been in just the last 2 months. Historically, monsoons was maybe a 4 month period. But now we're still getting the same amount of rain just in this greater concentration. But we'll have, on average, maybe 6 or 7 real storms for the month of June. And they're afternoon storms that so it'll be clear during the morning, and then the clouds will build up. And I'm right at the foot of the very end of the Rockies. They'll build up right over the mountains, mm-hmm. in these towering, huge, beautiful clouds, and then let out with the rain, which for us is a lot of rain. Folks in wetter climates would laugh. Our total, we get about 12 inches precipitation for the whole year. Wow. So we'll get most of it. We'll get a good 8-9 inches or so, mm-hmm. Out of that during this time period. On average, right? Some years we might get more, some we might get less. And the last few years we've been having multiple 50 or 100 year storms, which of course things are changing, but there's been flooding. You can look up videos of the flooding in Santa Fe and Albuquerque, and it's quite bizarre to see such. The cities just aren't designed the drainage for that at all,
right?
So, right. But it's really, since we're so high in elevation, it's very, very pleasant for the most part. Most homes don't have AC in them. We really rarely get more than into the 90s. We'll cool down into maybe the, 50s or 60s at night. But it's dry. It's very, very dry. And spring takes a long time to get going for us. So our last frost is about May 15th. So, and then it just jumps straight into summer at that point. So it's a very busy time for us as humans, and busy time for all the animals. So it's just a live And for a very brief period, you can see the color green.
That is so different from where I live. I'm nearly at sea level. I think I'm 50 feet above sea level or something like that on the California coast, north of San Francisco. And for us, this is the beginning of a time that gets really hot because spring is definitely behind us now. I was noticing that just about June 1st, the hills had gone through their alchemical change from emerald to gold, which they always do. And so all of the grasses have gone to seed and they've turned yellow. Hmm. Here, it really feels, it doesn't feel like an energetic, active time. It feels like a relaxing time. Most of the agricultural work has been done now. The gardens are in, the planting has been done, the crops, the vineyards have been pruned. And so we're just kind of waiting for things to grow, and we'll harvest later on in the year. So I always associate summer solstice with just kind of kicking back, lying in a hammock with a cool drink and a, you know, and friends around, and just socializing and sharing and enjoying life. This feels like the moment to me more than any other of freedom from anxiety. Whereas the harvest festivals are always about, well, is there enough? And then Yule is, of course, oh my God, is there enough? and you know, the February Sabbath, which I call River Rain, is, oh no, there's definitely not enough. And then spring rolls around and you can eat eggs and it's childlike again, but it's a totally different sort of feeling than what you describe, Yucca. So I think we'll have an interesting conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. It's still a very active get at it. There's, you know, the nights are short and it never feels like you can get enough sleep. Even though for us, we get, you know, 9.5 hours of night at the, on the solstice, you know, we're, you know, not that extreme, but, and then for us as a family, since our rainwater, so we catch our rainwater and, you know, that's the big project we've been working on this year, is still trying to get that completely set up. Cause drilling a well is, more than an annual income to be able to do that. You know, before expenses and taxes, it's just not the water so deep here. You just can't, I mean, wealthy folks can, but most of the, everybody else can't, if you're rural at all. So it's all catchment and, pumping water around once we get it. Cause we're not on, you know, just the way that our topography works out. So, you know, that relaxation that for us doesn't come for several months, and it, and the, you know, the rest of nature's not, for us, isn't doing that either. Everybody's busy right now. It's a world where everything is suddenly awake and there's lots of it. Life is everywhere.
Sure. I remember I did a backpacking trip in Grand Tetons in Wyoming many years ago and climbed up onto the Death Canyon Shelf, which is pretty high elevation. It's about 10,000 feet. Mm-hmm. And the spring wildflowers were everywhere. You know, it's so far north and it's such high elevation that they were just getting it together to, there was just enough warmth and enough water then with the melting snow for them to be able to come out and go through their cycle. Mm-hmm. So it really does depend on where you are. Do you ever have a moment in the year that feels like we can stop now for a bit and relax?
Oh, the winter.
In the winter, okay.
Yeah. So, you know, the really, I mean, halfway through October, right there, you can still do a little bit of, our last frost is October 15th, or average, of course.
Your first frost.
Our first, excuse me. Yes, last first. So that's our first. But by that time, everything's really out of the ground. You're just waiting on a few. You still have some of your leafies, and maybe some of your squash are still hanging out, and you're checking them every day. But
sure,
at that point, you know, the world just slows down.
And that's right about the time when you place your meat order, I would assume, when you...
It is, you know, yeah.
When you have butchered livestock that you can store away for the winter.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely when, for the cows, for the cabritos, you might wait a little while still. But our winter stretches a lot longer than your winter does.
Yes. So,
like, you really... don't have, you know, for us it really is kind of like a whole almost half the year, or you know, a third of the year chunk where things are just slow and dry, and we'll get a few big storms, you know, maybe four storms at it for the whole winter that might lock us in place for a few days, and then other than that it's just a cold, dry period.
Yeah, I mean, it's arguable that we never have winter here, because what we have is rain, and it turns everything green, and everything kind of goes crazy. I mean, the deciduous trees still lose their leaves, but everything else perks up and is super happy, and we have wildflowers and all that kind of stuff. And there used to be freezes, but with climate change just over the past 10 years, we are not having as many freezes, maybe two hard freezes in the whole winter. And that's a problem for lots of reasons, one of which is that there are parasitic insects that prey on the crops that we have here, like grapes, that have migrated up from Mexico and are now indigenous here because it's a good climate for them. And it used to be that a couple of hard frosts would kill them.
Yeah,
but that doesn't happen anymore. So that's part of what we're accommodating now.
Do you happen to know what your planting zone is?
I don't.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like what you're just describing is that it has in fact changed recently, but be interesting.
Well, it has, but I don't know that anyone has acknowledged it.
Yeah.
USDA map of planting zones for California. The internet is a wonderful thing.
I'm guessing 9, maybe?
Looks like 8A.
8A. Oh, okay. So yeah, you don't have a lot of... You have a lot of flexibility for your planting.
Yes.
In terms of how long you get quite a few rounds of some of the common annuals in there.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, people plant particularly things like potatoes, tomatoes, stuff like that. People get multiple rounds, and I mean, we 1 year we planted tomatoes and we had them in November, which was just obscene, but we had tomatoes in November. It was kind of cool.
It sounds delicious. You know, when you get, at least for me, when I get into that time period, I start really craving those things, like those fresh tomatoes, because even though you can buy them in the supermarket, they're when something's grown out of season or it's being shipped from somewhere, you know, it's just not the same as having.
Well, and genetically, commercial tomatoes, they're manufactured for mechanical harvesting. They're not bred for flavor.
Yeah.
They're bred not to get bruised when the machine picks them off the vine. So yeah, you lose everything of value in a commercial tomato. I don't ever buy tomatoes at the grocery store. If I don't get them from somebody that grew them, then I just don't eat them.
Well, the solstice is just about when our first little cherry tomatoes, the bigger ones will take a little longer, but by solstice, we've got little cherries that, you know, we have to start our tomatoes indoors, you know, eight sure. weeks early and all of that. But, but yeah, we grow little small fruits because the faster you can grow something, the more likely it is you'll actually get to eat it and somebody else won't eat it. We plant more than we need because lots of other, the birds want to eat it and everybody wants
the raccoons, you know, all those creatures.
Yeah. So honestly, I plant about 4 to 5 times what I actually want to have at the end, because you're going to lose some to some plants aren't going to make it and other ones are going to get eaten and you're going to get the timing wrong. And so if you plant that much more, then maybe you'll get what you need. So,
well, I hope so.
Yeah.
So how do you celebrate ritually the summer solstice, Yucca?
So we'll start with, the summer solstice for us is, you know, it's about what's happening in our environment. So we've got the monsoons, also in terms of the earth and the sun and all of that astronomically, that's important for us as well. But this is a season that we celebrate the arthropods. So the arthropods, that's a whole phylum up there that includes the insects and the arachnids and the centipedes and millipedes and actually all the crustaceans as well. So your crabs and lobsters, all those jointed legged beings, who are quite old. They appeared, I believe, in the Cambrian explosion is when we first saw them, and they've been around since. I mean, insects are newer, but you know, we're still talking, and there's debate on how old insects really are or aren't, but we could say probably at least 400 million years.
We know that they were really prominent in the Pennsylvanian, so.
Yeah, there's debate back and forth on when, so the hexapod, anyways, when the first insect is actually an insect versus its hexapodian ancestor, but for us, it's a time that we really celebrate them. They're very noticeable in our environment right now. And especially the insects, they are fundamental to the functioning of our ecosystems. And so each of the seasons, we have a different part of nature that we really focus in on. And right now, it's the, hey, we love you, our little jointed legged friends. And especially some of the more charismatic ones, right? Like the honeybees. And although I kind of personally like all the other ones too, that they creep my husband out, but I'm into the creepy crawlies. And so we try and do, you know, we do whole family learning. So we believe that everybody is learning always. That's not just something that children do, that we model that as adults as well. So we'll learn about, pay special attention to learning about the bugs right now. And we also do gift giving this time of year. So we do it at both solstices. And that was an intentional decision on my partner's and my part, in terms of deciding that for the winter solstice, we don't really like the power that the commercialism has. And that overpowering, like, gift, presence, material. And, you know, one of the, we talking about, well, that's not really what we value. So how do we lessen that, its power some for our family? Because to a certain extent, you know, we're part of this culture. Our kids are going to absorb a lot, even if we don't particularly want them to. And there's only so much that you can convince grandma, you can ask from grandma. You got to choose
and
pick your battles.
Not giving Christmas presents to the grandkids.
That is not, yeah, that's
not,
that's
on the
too
table.
Much, right? We can, that's just too hard. So, but we thought, okay, so if we spread that out, right, that kind of lessens a little bit of the power. If the gift giving is part of more holidays, then it's important, but it's not the only time of year. It doesn't become the only focus. And I like doing gifts. We don't go over the top. I mean, for both holidays, we read a few books and a few toys and some practical things. We're actually really big on practical gifts too.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having like a Christmas tree, we do a sort of a garland around the house, which is a honeybee. So we have the little hive, the cell structures, and then we make big honeybees that we put in there, and we eat lots of honey and talk about and watch ants. I think last time I mentioned my love of ants. We go out and we have those, we call them fire ants. They're not the same as what some folks in the Southeast are dealing with in terms of the invasive fire ants, but we have these big red ones that are, that make huge mounds that you can watch all their little activities, and we'll hang out with them and spend time in the rain. We love to go out when it's actually, when the rain and wind is coming down, and stand out there and put our arms out and get wet and put our faces towards the sky and just
all those things I do in February.
Yeah. So that's what we're doing. And of course we do a feast night near the actual holiday. We kind of just pick what day works for everybody.
Sure.
More or less, we know we're not worried about it being, you know, I actually do have an alarm set for like what the actual solstice is, but we don't celebrate at that moment because I like to nerd out about that kind of thing. So, yeah. Well, what about you, Mark?
Well, ours is very different because it's very leisurely. And so it becomes a challenge even to gather people together. A couple of years ago, I did a gathering at the beach. That was nice. And we barbecued ribs and vegetables and ate and made a fire and hung around, and somebody brought a guitar, and it was a ritual, but you wouldn't really call it a ritual. There was nothing formal about it, but it was definitely a human ritual behavior that happens when people are at the ocean with a fire.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I do is I have a formal practice that I do at the summer solstice every year, which is around my sun broom.
Mm-hmm.
I have a oaken handle for a broom that is half of a branch that I gathered from my favorite state park, the other half of which is the hilt of my ritual knife that I made, which is an obsidian knife.
Hmm.
This handle, I cut wild rye and bind it with cord onto the handle to make a broom every year. And I leave it out in the sun all day on the day of the solstice, with the idea that it's symbolically absorbing the power of the sun at this time when the grass that's gone to seed is all yellow, and the sun is at its most potent time. And what I do every year is I unwind the previous year's wild rye,
mm-hmm.
and put it to compost, and then gather a new, I have a little scythe thing that I use to gather new wild rye and then bind it in again and make another sun broom, so that if I'm feeling that the house is really kind of, you know, oppressive and crappy in November, I have this broom that I can use to wave around the rooms of my house and bring that sun back into it. And of course it's entirely psychological, but that's the nature of ritual and magic, right?
Yeah.
That's why we are non-theist pagans and not just non-theist scientists. This is a ritual that I've been doing for many years, and it's very meaningful. Mm. I bring the sun broom out at Yule when the sun is being born again. And I've thought about the possibility of burning all the rye at Yule, but I haven't quite been willing to do that yet. Because it leaves me without that broom for the rest of the time of the year. And February is pretty grim.
Yeah.
It's cold and damp and wet and dark, and there's not a lot going for it.
Well, and hey, compost. I think that's something I'd love to see brought more into ritual awareness in the pagan community.
I knew someone in the pagan community who called himself Compost.
Oh. In a loving, respectful way?
Yes.
In an honoring way? Okay.
Yes, in an honoring way. He was like, I'm Compost. I'm more at the root of everything than you guys are.
That's the best stuff.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So those are things that I do. And I don't know what's going to happen this year, but I'm hoping to gather some people, hopefully not through Zoom. I mean, we can gather in my backyard, wearing masks, staying 6 feet apart from one another out in the open air. And I'm hoping that we can just break some bread, drink some wine, acknowledge the season and say our thanks and move on to the next time. I'm hoping that that's what we'll be able to do. But who knows? Second wave of COVID could happen.
Yeah. You feeling the Zoom fatigue?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
I'm enjoying That's Zoom great. Interaction with people. I'm getting to see people that I haven't seen for a long time. I'm getting to see people that I've never seen ever, like you.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling fatigue about it at all.
Okay. So it's the hope to see them in person simply because in person is, there's just something more alive about it.
It's warmer and more immediate and more personal.
Yeah. You had said that your broom was, it had oak. Does the oak have a special meaning for you?
Around here, there are two sacred trees, and they are the oak and the redwood.
Mm.
And they don't live together at all. The oak is the keystone of the oak chaparral ecosystem, which dominates the inland valleys, and the oaks tend to cluster in the swales that drain from the hills because there's a little more water there. Whereas the redwoods are more towards the coast where there's more moisture and more fog.
Around here, the oaks are very much associated with fire systems. They're some of the trees that come back afterwards. But ours, I imagine, are probably much more shrubby kinds of oaks than what I would imagine you might have. Do you know these are fire-dependent systems or if they're associated with fire where you are?
Ours are live oaks and black oaks primarily. And they do have a role in the fire system because they tend not to be consumed by fire. They get scorched, but the surrounding lands get burned.
So
they tend to repopulate. And redwoods are very unique to the California coast up into the southern parts of Oregon, but oaks are nearly ubiquitous. You don't find them in Australia or Antarctica, but you find them nearly everywhere else. And I find oaks to be really sacred looking creatures. They're the most Halloween-y things in the fall at all, with their crabbed reaching and clawing out into the air. They're very, very witchy trees, and they grow slowly, but dominate the landscape that they live in. And they are incredibly generous with acorns. The native people here lived on the fat and protein of acorns almost exclusively at certain times of the year. So I find them very sacred. And so the summer solstice. What are you going to get your kids?
Oh, well, they're really easy right now.
Sure.
Because everything is just, I mean, the littlest one, I could just get him a box and he would just be happy to open it and he would be so excited to open the box.
I was going to say, boxes right. and wrapping are kind of a big deal.
Yeah. But we're really big on getting them, you know, any interest they show in something, we love to get them things. And my oldest, who will be turning 4 in August, is very interested in bodies right now, in like organs and, you know, what body parts are and all of that. So we got our like a little, you know, kids book about, you know, this is the circulatory system and this is the, and she's just loving it. So we'll probably get her like a little model of the
like
person,
the visible man or the visible woman.
Where you can like see this, everything inside. And speaking
those are very cool.
Yeah, they're fantastic. And speaking, you were talking about the spooky of the trees. It's delightful to me. It makes me laugh so much, but out of context, it could be a little spooky that she likes to tell people about what the different organs do. So you know, recently she was telling everyone that bones make blood. So going around, bones make blood. Your heart pumps blood. So we have a great fun with her on that.
Science nerd slash witch, definitely.
Maybe like a little trampoline or something like that, because they have so much energy.
Yes, something to allow them, or a treadmill.
Yeah.
Something that would allow them to work out all that energy that doesn't involve mom and dad.
Yes. Something that purposely cannot, like I'll get a trampoline that can't have an adult on it, or else it'll break. So I'm going to sit here and you can jump.
And I will watch you.
Yes.
And I'll go, wow, look at you. Whoa, that's great.
Jump faster, faster. Yep.
Which is still emotional labor, but it's not as much as anything else.
And don't get me wrong, I am a very active person, but they run, that's just what they're supposed to do. They just run circles around adults.
Sure, of course.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. It's what they do.
Yep. And we'll probably get her like a little, bug stuffed animal or something like that to celebrate.
Sweet.
And hopefully make it, they're not scared of bugs right now. And we'd hopefully like to keep it that way if we can. But it's gotta let what happens
yeah,
happen.
Yeah, bugs and snakes, those are the two anathema in this culture. So if you can teach them not to be afraid of bugs and snakes.
She likes snakes a lot.
Snakes are cool.
Although we have rattlers here, so we have to really work on the snake safety. But we had a little garden snake the other day that she was trying to catch. So we did that as kids too. But it was important. You learn basic safety and the respect for them. And I think it's good. I think it's good for people to be in contact with the rest of, with other life, you know, sure. Not just cats and dogs, although cats and dogs are fantastic, but there's a lot more.
There's a lot more out there than cats and dogs.
Yeah.
And cats and dogs have eyes facing front with, you know, big mammal faces. And that, I mean, to me, that's the easy stuff. The harder stuff is learning to relate to other things that don't look as human-like. yeah. as a part of nature and a part of the world.
Exactly.
So, summer solstice. Congratulations, everyone. You've made it to another one. Hooray!
Yep. And the start of the next half of the year.
Yes, the dark time is arriving.
Yeah.
And it's hard to believe at the beginning of it because they're still the longest days. As I was saying on the Atheopagan Facebook group, these are the next 4 weeks are the brightest time of the year. So those 2 weeks after the solstice are still beautiful with long, long, long evenings. But it's starting to dwindle. And yep. we have to be aware of that.
So, well, thank you, Mark. This is another great one.
Yeah. I so enjoy talking with you, Yucca. Thank you.
Likewise. And happy solstice.
Happy solstice. It's a challenging time to be here on planet Earth, but it out there, nature is doing its thing and doesn't care about all the things that we worry ourselves about. So
yeah,
that's a relief at some level.
It is, yeah. Those little ants are doing their ant thing.
Yes. And we're doing our little human thing. All right. It was great talking with you. Have a great evening.
Me too.